through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, Seahawks snapped that losing streak with a win over the 49ers, and the offense put up 30 points for the first time in a long time, back since that win over Jacksonville. So here to help us figure out just how much stock to take from that is Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Good. Hey, how are you guys?
Good. You and fellow Seattle Times reporter Adam Jude do like a four takeaways type thing after all of the Seahawks games. And what to you, I'm not going to make you share four or even two, what to you was maybe one of the biggest takeaways from this game?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest was that Russell Wilson sort of looked like himself for the first time since he'd come back from the injury. 30 of 37 really should have been 31 of 37 and three touchdowns. You know, that would have made the stat line look that much more impressive. But, it was sort of more of a quick short passing game thing maybe, but it really fit well with what they wanted to try to get done that way. And Russell could execute everything. And it kind of seemed like the most assured and just the most accurate, obviously, with his throws that we've seen him since then. The other, I think, is that they played well. They didn't necessarily play well, but they played with energy and enthusiasm and all of that. I always thought this was going to be a really tough game for them, even if everything had been going well after playing Washington on a Monday night, having to make that long trip back. That's, you can look up the numbers. That's historically a tough turnaround for teams, any team in any situation, having any kind of a season. And then when you do it against a San Francisco team that had won three in a row, and, on paper, San Francisco has a lot more to play for and all that. And, the Seahawks, I guess if you were wondering, if they were ready to cash in the season being a 3-8, if they stopped listening to Pete's message and all that kind of stuff, I think they disproved a lot of that on Sunday.
Bob, it was crazy to hear for the first time that they'd actually won the time of possession battle, and they get 64 plays, and that felt like just double the number of what they've been dealing with all season long. But really, they hadn't converted a ton on third down. They converted 5 third downs out of 15 attempts. But turnovers certainly were a factor in them getting extra possessions and extra chances. How big of a difference in your mind was it that they got more cracks at it? 64 plays versus the typical, I think they're clocking in around, 54 or something like that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, part of what helped them win the time of possession battle is San Francisco scored their touchdowns really quickly. So San Francisco wasn't doing what other teams have done, have been taking 18 plays to move down the field. They scored a one play drive and then Kittle the 48-yard touchdown and things like that. So, it's not always just what you do, but it can be what the other team does a little bit when it comes to time of possession as well and how they want to play. But for sure, the turnovers were a really big deal. Garoppolo just, reading all the stuff in San Francisco this week, I mean, people are basically at their wit's end with him down there. It seemed like every pass was 5 feet over the intended receiver's head. And, the Seahawks, I think forced a few of those. I heard Pete kind of talking about how their kind of mid-level of the defense coverage was a little better and forced some of those, making the quarterback have to make harder throws in some of those than maybe they had done in previous weeks by sort of being in their proper drops more often. And so certainly you can force some of that, but I think there was some times where Garoppolo was just missing guys, but certainly turnovers really help. They didn't start out great on third down, but then they did start to convert some of them, and that really helps as well. I thought a really underrated play was, the Adrian Peterson, the 4-yard run on third and three. I mean, that's like the kind of play we haven't seen them, we've seen too often in the last few weeks. It's, they'll get a third and medium or whatever, not be able to pick it up. And they pick that up, and a couple of plays later, down to the four, and they punch it in from there. And, so I just think there were some, they just played better in some of those kind of ways. It helped, the 49ers had injury issues. They, their best two linebackers were out. They lost the starting corner early in the game. You saw them, I think, really try to take advantage of those things with some of what they did as well.
Is there anything about the offense performance that you saw in this one that feels a little less sustainable? Like, for instance, I believe Russell Wilson, if he's getting healthier, can continue to play well. But there might be something else that I'm looking at saying, I don't know about that.
Well, it was good to see them get some good plays from some other guys. Like the Eskridge had a couple of really real timely plays, getting Rashad Penny out there and doing some things. You know, like just his block as well on the one play that led to a completion to Eskridge. I mean, Penny and Eskridge are two really high draft picks for the last 4 years, and this was the first time this year you saw them together on the field do much of anything. You know, that helps you a lot. To just kind of, you know, you always talk about spreading the ball around, but you got to be able to have someone who it's worth spreading it to. And, you know, you saw with Penny, just the screen pass, and he turns that into a 27-yard gain. For everybody who keeps wondering why they have any patience and faith in him, it's, mm-hmm. you know, he does just enough of that when he has been healthy to sort of show why it's worth kind of, you know, to keep trying with him. You know, so I thought those things helped. You know, it's interesting. I hadn't, you know, seeing how quickly Russ was getting rid of the ball after the game. And I was like, oh, is this kind of something new or whatever? And went back and realized that they've basically done that almost every time they played San Francisco the last 3 years. And it seems pretty obvious that when they play them, it's something they want to do to really try to mitigate San Francisco's pass rush and, you know, Nick Bosa and all that. But, you know, so I don't know if that's something they'll keep doing every single week, you know, kind of depending on who you're playing, but certainly, you know, it was good to see them have a game plan like that and be able to execute it pretty well.
And they certainly needed to, Bob, as well with how the offensive line has been playing. You know, you talk about the San Francisco defensive line, how great they have been, but this is, and that's very true. The offensive line has really been a surprise this year in terms of how much they struggled. I know, obviously, they're dealing with some significant injuries, but what have you made of the offensive line play throughout the season, or and particularly in this game?
Yeah, well, as you say, I mean, it's hard to assess, make a huge judgment out of this game because you start out without Damian Lewis, Kyle Fuller, who was already kind of hobbling, you know, trying to take his place, and then he had to come out of the game early. So you're going with Jake Curhan, an undrafted rookie free agent at left guard, going against, you know, Eric Armstead and guys like that. That's a really tough ask right out of the gate. And then you finish the game with Stone Forsythe having to play right tackle. But, you know, Brandon Schell, obviously he's been for about a month now been dealing with that shoulder injury. And, you know, so another thing, I know people hate to hear about injuries, but it's a factor. And, you know, I don't think he's been able to play to his usual level the last 2 or 3 weeks as he's been dealing with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they made the change at center, obviously, about 3 weeks ago with going to Ethan Posick instead of Kyle Fuller there. So, obviously, they're still kind of searching. You know, it's not the greatest offensive line in the NFL. I don't think it's the worst. I think it's somewhere in maybe the bottom third range or something like that, sort of depending on who you have from each week going forward. But, you know, they do have to do some, you know, that's why obviously getting rid of the ball quickly and trying to do some of those things makes sense with what the current state of the line is.
Hey, Bob, we don't have an update yet, obviously, on Jamal Adams, so I'm not going to ask you for that, nor am I going to ask you to predict what he's going to do. But as a reporter, just so fans know, what kind of things do you look for context clues about what could be happening with Adams?
With Jamal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's concerning when it's the exact same shoulder, and we don't know, I guess, if it's the exact same injury, but I mean, he had shoulder surgery after last season. And, you know, so if it's a similar injury to that, and you know, if it's something they feel like they got to go in and do something like that again with to fix or whatever, so it doesn't become, too chronic, that obviously would, you know, with 5 weeks left of the season, if you do the math, you know, who knows if we'd see him play again, if that's what it is. And, you know, being 4-8 and with a guy who's a big part of your future going forward, you know, maybe that plays into what kind of decisions you make too. You know, if you're making a Super Bowl run, you try to play through everything. If you're not, you know, maybe you wait and see what it is. And if it makes more sense to not risk it, or certainly not risk it, you know, the first week or two right out of the gate. So, you're right. We sort of need to wait until we know for sure. I think he was having MRIs done on Monday on that, and so we should hear, you know, we should hear something for sure by tomorrow. But Ryan Neal was able to come in, and at least they do have an experienced guy there in Ryan, who's had to play a lot the last couple of years for a variety of reasons, so, you know, it won't be new to him going out there. You know, might impact if they want to use their dime pack as much, which has kind of been Ryan Neal's specialty. You know, they'll have to reconfigure that to have someone else be able to take part in that. But, that, you know, the secondary has sort of been hit a little bit with injuries. It felt like it was really finding its stride with Trey Brown's inclusion and things like that. They're losing Trey Brown, and then maybe losing Jamal Adams would obviously take two really big players out of that.
Bob, I wanted to get your take on, you know, the past couple of days we've heard a little bit more chatter about Jody Allen, her involvement, what she thinks of the situation. What have you made of some of the reports about Mike Garofalo and we heard from Peter King, you know, talking about, you know, that there's going to be some tough decisions that need to be made at the end of the season regarding Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson, and Jody Allen's involvement and decision-making in that aspect.
Well, I don't feel like that's breaking news. I mean, I think we've been writing that for months. Depending on how this season went, you know, this could be the real watershed year for trying to decide if they're going to keep going forward with the same group. Obviously, as Jake, as you know, you're probably closer to it than I am with Russell and sort of his what happened with last season and what messages he was sending to the organization and if that's something that would crop up again after this offseason. And, you know, I think with 2 years left on his contract and being 33 years old now, it's an obvious time. You know, we heard Russell talk about his legacy after last year, you know, having what is likely going to be a non-playoff year at this point of his career is not really obviously what he wants to have as his legacy at this point, as he sees, you know, Tom Brady making another playoff, you know, the Tom Brady's and Aaron Rodgers's and those guys making a more playoff run. So, you know, with John and Pete, obviously they sent a really strong signal right around this time last year when each of them got extensions. You know, Pete through the 2025 season, John through the 2027 draft. But, you know, this is the NFL and you see things happen quickly and drastically all the time. So I still feel like these last five games are going to be really vital in that. You know, if you go back and look at like the 2009 season, the last time they made a change when no one really saw it coming. But part of the impetus was that team really just floundered to the finish, you know, basically just getting blown out every week. You know, that's why I thought something like Sunday, I think it does matter a little bit when you see the way they play. And if it looks like they're still responding to Pete and, you know, if they make a little run here, they've obviously got three really winnable games left on the schedule. And then, you know, the two other ones are going to be tough, but maybe you steal one of those and you look like you can still be a competitor in the NFC West. And so, you know, there's no guarantee that change is better. You know, are you going to find a better quarterback than Russell Wilson? Are you going to find a better coach than Pete Carroll? So I think that's the kind of thing you got to do too, is get to the end of the season. If you decide that, well, it's Russell's injury that was the biggest part of it. And, you know, maybe we can keep the band together and make another run at it in 2022 by shoring some things up around that core that is a really proven core. You know, for sure. It's going to be, you know, tough decisions that they're going to have to make there.
He's an expert on this stuff, you guys. It's Bob Condotta. Make sure you're reading his work on the Seattle Times or seattletimes.com. Thanks so much, Bob.
Okay. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, as we've talked about a lot today, Pete Carroll had no update on Jamal Adams' shoulder injury during his Monday afternoon press conference. So what is the real headline?
We're about to see just how much Jamal Adams adds to Seattle's defense. Now, we talked about it a bit earlier in the show, Jake, and I said this is an opportunity. It is not a silver lining, because that's a bad way to frame injuries, but it's an opportunity for Seattle to see when Russell Wilson was injured. What does the team look like without Russell Wilson? They'd never experienced that since he had been drafted to Seattle. He'd never missed a start. Now, Jamal Adams has missed starts with Seattle, and he is a newer player, only been here. This is his second year. But you also gave up 2 first-round picks. Not only that, but here's why that especially matters. The first-round pick you're looking at this year, which now belongs to the Jets, is what, number 4 or 5, Curtis? I mean, you're looking at a first-round pick that will be the highest pick you've had in a decade. I'm not saying you want to see the defense struggle. You don't. And the defense has been really solid. But you want to know that Jamal Adams is a difference maker.
Yeah, you do want to know that. You do want to see that. And I think that is an important aspect of this defense. And that's the caveat with all this, Stacey, as we talk about this. You don't want to see the defense struggle. You don't want to see them go through issues with Jamal Adams being out. You want to see them continue to have that next man up mentality. And I'm not going to overreact to this game if he misses against the Houston Texans. I mean, the defense should do well with or without Jamal Adams in the lineup. But if he's out against the Rams, I will be especially curious to see how the defense plays without Jamal Adams in that particular game. And when you give up that much capital, you need it to have that player be incredibly impactful. You need to see him make tons of game-changing plays. And we have not seen that at a high level like we did a year ago with Jamal Adams, and I think that that is concerning, and it's something that has to change. And Stacey, when you talk about relevant or learning a lot about the team and the setup of the player and how it impacts the team, Russell Wilson's a unique conversation because there is a legitimate chance that you trade him or could be in that discussion at the end of the year, right, as to what is best for the franchise. With Jamal Adams, I don't really see that as a discussion. You just paid him, and I don't see you recouping any serious value that you gave up for Jamal Adams. So Jamal Adams is going to be here regardless.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, a rough one again at Climate Pledge Arena last night. The Kraken reverted back to their early season ways with a 6-1 blowout loss to Pittsburgh. Starting goalie Philip Grubauer was pulled after just 5 minutes of action. What's the real headline?
Grubauer may not be able to get a save right now, but he did get his agent a very nice Christmas present this year with that 6-year contract. No take backs. As a reminder, you guys, ESPN senior NHL writer Greg Wyshynski will be joining us at 1:30. And I am most curious to ask him about this issue itself, about goaltending. Wyshynski himself had an article heading into the season, Curtis, you mentioned this, that looked at Seattle as potentially the third best team with goaltending, one of the better teams with defense. And right now they're 32nd.
Dead last.
I mean, it's an honor that that jersey number's retired for Seattle, so maybe that's intentional.
We're in the
Who
league.
Can say that, you know what I mean? But it, I think I am most curious about how much of it is Grubauer and how much of it is struggles in that zone or struggles defensively.
Right.
What's the biggest contributor? What's happening here? Can it get better? I'm most curious to ask Greg those questions specifically. He'll be joining us at 1:30.
And I hope we get an answer that's not Philip Grubauer related, right? Like, it would be hard if you have Greg Wyshynski who sits there and says, no, this is a Grubauer problem. Like, he's just not playing
well.
He's
cooked.
Exactly.
He's washed.
That's the last thing that I want to hear right now when it comes to the Kraken and his current contract and obviously what he is supposed to be here for this team in Seattle. And it just has been unfortunate that you have not gotten more consistent, more productive play out of him. And, you know, obviously there are other factors around that. And the defense has not been as good as everyone was hoping or expecting them to be. But over the last few weeks, one of the reasons why they have been winning is their defense has been better. Their goaltending has been better. And so, unfortunately, that problem reared its ugly head again last night.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Oregon pass rusher and one of the projected top picks in this next year's draft, Kayvon Thibodeau, has declared for the draft, and he'll skip the Ducks' bowl game. What is the real headline?
The uni switch to the pros will be an easy one for Thibodeau when he goes from Ducks green to Jets green.
I hate this.
Feels good, doesn't it?
I hate this rewrite so
that's
much.
That's all obviously a joke. Thibodeau's projected to go at around number two overall in the latest mock that I saw, which is before the Jets would have a pick and likely before. Well, it's going to be before Seattle has a pick, but Seattle right now, Jets are holding the 4th and 5th overall pick.
It would hurt a lot to watch Thibodeau be picked with the Seahawks draft pick that they gave to
the
New York
Jets. It's going to hurt no matter who it is. And no, I want the best for people. This is petty. This is a horrible thing to say. Will I be rooting for the player they pick with the Seahawks pick? No.
Absolutely
I would
not.
Never root for anyone to fail. Will I root for their success? I don't know. I don't know. I
Depending on who it is.
I feel mean saying that.
Do you? I just think it's being real. It's being very honest. And everyone here in Seattle is thinking the same exact thing you are. So you're not alone. That is for sure.
You're just going to do a little fist pump.
I don't know if I'll be doing a fist pump, but it'll be a sigh of relief. If it doesn't pan out, it'll be
like a top corner gets burned for a touchdown.
Right. You don't want it to be, in years from now, you don't want it to be one of those moves where it's like, oh, you remember, like the Herschel Walker trade, for example, for the Dallas Cowboys. Do you remember what happened with the Herschel Walker trade and the Dallas Cowboys were able to load up and the franchise that they were able to become because of that particular trade? You just don't want that to be the case for the New York Jets. And right now, with a lot of the dysfunction that's currently going on, I feel pretty safe in saying that that's not going to happen. But, I mean, with the fourth and fifth pick in the draft, certainly helps.
Yeah, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, looking at their big boards right now, Mel Kiper has Derek Stingley Jr., the cornerback from LSU, as his fifth-ranked prospect.
That'd be nice.
McShay has Stingley as his number four-ranked prospect, and number five is Kyle Hamilton, a safety out of Notre Dame.
Okay,
so,
well,
a couple of DBs.
You don't need a safety.
Can you imagine getting that draft and being like, oh, we could use a safety?
I would come unglued. Absolutely
Jake said
unglued.
Would explode.
Oh, man, that would be awful.
I kind of want to see it.
I kind of do.
Or to see that pick used on a running back. Yeah, that would be rough, too.
That's what I was having a conversation with someone, and they were like, you could trade Russell Wilson for first-round picks. And I was like, yeah, for sure. And then I was like, what would the Seahawks select with that first-round pick? Because the Patriots, now they didn't get a first-round pick in a trade for Brady, so it's not quite the same, but had a first-round pick and used it on their quarterback of the future to move forward with Mac Jones. Would the Seahawks pick a quarterback in the first round? I'm like, not entirely convinced that they would.
And that is part of the problem. That is part of the problem right now as you sit here at 4-8 and you look at how to improve this team. The fact that you have that question and you have that perspective, it's definitely part of the current problem.
All right. ESPN ranked all 32 teams from most to least healthy. I'll tell you where the Seahawks landed. Plus, it's that time of the year. We'll tell you how a couple teams could clinch a playoff spot this week. Spoiler alert, you guys. I don't want you to be kind of hanging on the edge of your seat here. The Seahawks are not one of those teams. They are not one of those teams, but there are a few. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. We have some playoff clinching scenarios in Week 14. Jake, there are three teams that can clinch a spot this weekend, and guess what? Absolutely none of them are in the AFC. All of them are NFC teams. The Arizona Cardinals at 10-2, go figure. They can clinch a playoff berth with a win. That doesn't clinch the division, just a playoff berth. It's hard to say without saying playoff berth. I just want you guys to know that. I'm trying to speak quickly here. Just try it yourself. The Green Bay Packers at 9-3 can also clinch not just a spot, but the NFC North Division with a win and then a Minnesota loss or tie. It's this very similar scenario for clinching a playoff berth. So you've got the Packers, the Cardinals. Last one here, the 9-3 Tampa Bay Buccaneers that can clinch the NFC South Division title with a win and then a loss or tie by New Orleans and Carolina.
Well, I mean, you look at the NFC in terms of the power structure. It is crazy to see you have the top teams that I really truly believe can compete with anybody in the league. I really favor the Cardinals, Green Bay, and the Buccaneers to have a great chance at winning the Super Bowl this season. And then outside of that, it's really a down year for the NFC. I mean, just as a whole, and you look at the teams that are still in it for the playoffs. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers, for goodness sake, are still very much in it to be able to make it into the playoffs. So,
I mean, Jake, the Seahawks are in it.
Sure, yes.
3%.
3%, that's right. That's exactly right.
Man, if they went 5-0 and made the playoffs somehow, some way, I mean, it would be a miracle of epic
Not
proportions.
When?
Jake,
they go
if 5-0. Jake, if someone gave you a jar of 100 jelly beans and said, three of these jelly beans will kill you, good luck, would you feel confident taking a jelly bean out of there?
No.
Exactly right, because 3% is still substantial. Next story.
Sure.
ESPN ranked the NFL teams from healthiest to least healthy. Now, I actually thought that they would rank Seattle, I don't know why I thought this, a little bit higher, just because the two most significant injuries, obviously to starting quarterback and starting running back, but they've otherwise had DK all year long, Tyler all year long, Dwayne Brown's been there, you know what I mean? But no, Seahawks are in the bottom tier of teams that are really, really missing some time. So this is what a friend of the show, Brady Henderson, says about the Seattle Seahawks. Their health rating is a 3, 13 players on IR, which means 25 starts have been missed because of injury. They said, Russell Wilson's finger injury badly hurt the Seahawks in two ways. He said not only did they go 1-3 in the four games they had to finish without him, but when he came back, he was also still clearly dealing with something, and that also led to another three-game losing streak. And he said, by the way, they not only missed Russell Wilson and got back an injured Russell Wilson, they don't have Chris Carson, who had season-ending neck surgery.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, when you look at this from, if you want to look at this from an absolute positive perspective, okay, here's where they're at. You start to see Russell Wilson play more like himself, and you go, okay, well, if this team could have had a healthy Russell Wilson, if this team could have had a healthy Chris Carson, what would that have done for this group? How much better would they have been? And is this team still really competing for a playoff spot? I think that the answer is yes. But honestly, Stacey, with a lot of the issues that they currently have with this team, how much better do you think they would be?
Well, that's okay. So that's exactly what I was going to ask, is I've seen a lot of people say, I think everyone's overreacting. And I don't think that this is an unfair point. I think it is an angle you can take. And I understand. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. I've seen a lot of people saying, look, this team has four wins. There's a lot of issues with this team that predated any of these injuries. You headed into the season. You were heading into the season with big question marks at cornerback, with the cornerback you brought in as a free agent to be potentially your starter being traded away to another team. And by the way, he did nothing with that team. So you had lots of question marks and lots of concerns. But what if you would have been in a much better spot without these injuries? And I think they would have. I don't think they would have won the division. I don't think they would have won a Super Bowl. I think they had a talented roster, but not a top five roster. I do not think they'd be in this spot without injuries to Russell Wilson and Chris Carson.
Yeah, I view this as, okay, this team had a lot of issues before this, and even with the injuries, I view them as probably a 500 team right now. 500 team, and that right now would put you squarely in an opportunity.
If both were healthy?
Yeah,
you see them as a 500 team if both Chris Carson and Russell Wilson are healthy.
Yes.
Then why were we talking about this team pushing for deep into the playoffs before the season?
I mean, because I honestly thought that the offense itself would have been a little bit more seamless in terms of the transition. Clearly, that was not the case. In terms of being on the same page, the working relationship between offense and defense, between the group as a whole, it was not cohesive, and there were still problems even when Russell Wilson was healthy, even when Chris Carson was on the field. The other aspect of it, though, Stacey, too, is that the offensive line has greatly underperformed, and you can look at the last 2 weeks and say, oh, well, Damian Lewis had been out, and they've been dealing with some health issues, but that has not been the story for this team with the offensive line. They have not been a good unit pretty much all season long. And so I think that that is one reason why I would say, that's another reason why I would say that this group is more, would be more around the 500 level rather than being a team that is pushing for the top of the division.
Season's over for Ryan Fitzpatrick. I know a lot of you might have thought it was already over, but no, not officially. Now it is, though. He's undergoing arthroscopic surgery to his right hip, which ends any chance that he could come back this season. So it's the Taylor Heinicke Show. And Curtis, please hold your jokes about people born in the 80s getting hip surgery.
Well, I was going to make the observation that, boy, that was one costly water slide that Ryan Fitzpatrick went down.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, conspiracy theories.
I
don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think it's a fact. I'm taking it as a reporter in the field.
Really? Yeah, we go out to Daryl at the water park.
Yeah.
Daryl.
Daryl, what do you got? Yeah, I see ya. I don't know why he sounds like he's from Philly. It's Washington. Yeah, I see ya. Fitzpatrick here going down the...
He's limping. Could you on the water slide.
Honestly.
Back to you.
Could you imagine if that really was indeed the case? I mean, that
it is.
Okay.
Let us
guys
believe the truth.
Sure. I will
it
let
makes
you believe
too much
that
sense.
If that is what derailed him, gosh, what a missed opportunity for Ryan Fitzpatrick, honestly. I mean, maybe it turns out to be the same thing as Taylor Heinicke, but I thought that this was going to be a really good fit for Ryan Fitzpatrick in terms of the role that he was going to play for this team and everything else. The defense has not played up to the standard of what everyone thought they were going to be to enter in the year and for the first half of the season. But I still saw that this was going to be a great fit for Fitz. And in the meantime, I love the opportunity that Heinicke has been given and the fact that he has been making the most of it from his perspective. And I hope he continues with that success.
Something about Fitzpatrick and how likable he's been, well-liked by teammates and by media and coverage of him. It's like everyone loves a backup, but everyone especially loves Fitzpatrick. Yes, it's a bummer that this injury happened. It doesn't, like, add to the legacy, but it's almost like if it really was on a water slide, it kind of fits with this idea of, like, Fitzpatrick just being kind of a cool dude. Question for you guys. We all know that there are injuries that have ended careers and shortened legacies. Bo Jackson is, like, the number one thing. Is there ever an injury that added to someone's legacy that made them cooler?
Joe Theismann, maybe?
Oh, God.
I mean, in the worst way.
Smith, Jason Pierre-Paul.
Oh, yeah, when his hand got...
Coming back and still
losing
being
a couple
really
of fingers.
Effective. Yeah.
True. But JPP, at the time when he was with the Giants, he was viewed as one of the game's best
rushers. It forever altered it in a way that didn't...
If we're not sticking to just football,
it doesn't
here,
have to be make someone better, but maybe add it adds to their legacy.
In baseball, you've got Curt Schilling with the bloody sock, but he's... kind of
true.
He said some things over the last few years that have him.
That legacy's kind of waned a little bit.
But
yeah.
In the moment, it was like, oh my gosh, this guy's pitching an elimination game and he's bleeding. He's bleeding. I can see it with my own eyes.
What if it was just like, I know it wasn't, but what if it was just like a scratch that was a bleeder? Like it wasn't really much of anything. It just happened to be bleeding.
It's like how J.J. Watt got a bloody nose but then left it. You know what I mean? Like you leave it on purpose. Yes. You're like, no, my nose is broken. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but. Someone said Ronnie Lott broken finger.
Oh yes.
He got it amputated.
He had to amputate it. Absolutely. That definitely added to the legend of Ronnie Lott. No question.
Jake, did you have an
great
injury
call
that
there
added
by the
to
texter.
Your legacy ever?
Who? No, I
broken
no.
ankle.
No,
over there.
Okay. Don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe someone on a punt return literally.
No, I mean that happened in freshman football. No one is remembering that, okay?
I think my dislocated elbow adds to my legacy.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Playing hot lava. I mean, things got real.
I don't mean to brag. I did
wild and crazy in college.
I swam through a very recent surgery to have my wisdom teeth removed.
Really?
Is it the same as getting a finger amputated? I don't know.
I don't know how you did that. That's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's incredible.
All right. It was a very weird Monday night game with just 3 pass attempts, 2 pass completions for the New England Patriots. I know no one really cares when you're a Seahawks fan, but here's why it matters. Bill Belichick has done something better than any other coach. So how has he been doing it, and why haven't others tapped into it? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, I got a couple more injuries coming in, by the way, Jake. So we were ending NFL headlines talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick getting that hip injury, season-ending hip surgery. And I said in a lighthearted way, clearly not being serious, that it adds to his legacy.
Yes.
And reportedly, wink, getting his hip hurt on a water slide at a water park rather than during a game, which I absolutely believe. But then we were talking about actual injuries that added to someone's legacy. So what did you guys say? You guys had a couple.
I said Curt Schilling.
Curt Schilling.
Yeah, Curt Schilling. We said we had talked about...
Joe Theismann.
There's a line
horrific
between
legacy.
not like ending someone's career, but like almost like adding to it. It didn't necessarily make them a better player, but like it. When people think of this player, so people were texting in. Someone said Willis Reed, Byron Leftwich, also his offensive line carrying him down
Marshall.
The field.
Yes,
yeah, and they still lost, but still an amazing completion in the moment before being carried down the field.
Being on that, still playing with a broken, like a legitimate broken leg, is one of the craziest things that I've ever seen. Definitely added to your legacy. Then you know we talked about Alex Smith. That is one that absolutely fits here in this conversation. Another one I like this from Cam and Puyallup, Earl Thomas. You know. You might not initially think of that, but think of what happened when he got injured. You will never, ever, and I agree with you, Cam, you'll never forget the middle finger that was directed Pete Carroll's way as he was being carted off the field. I mean, that is an image that will be seared into my brain.
Yeah, maybe less. That one a little bit less to do with the injury itself and whether it affected. I don't think the average person, if you were like, what injury was that? I don't know that they could think at the top of their head what it was, mostly because he had suffered a broken leg, I think, the year prior. But also, you immediately, if you search Earl Thomas, Google Images, I feel like one of the top 10 images has to be that. How is like one of the first images not that picture?
Yeah.
Curtis is doing it right now.
Yeah, another good one, I would say, is Evander Holyfield, you know, getting his ear bit off by Mike Tyson. I mean, that is one that...
Oh, yeah.
That is crazy, and he will always, forever be... remember for that. Lou Gehrig, yeah, 425. I agree with you on that. And
not 206 is Paul Moyer. Which, oh, man. I mean, Paul will gladly tell you the story.
Yes, he will.
We don't need to go into it.
So if you
don't we?
So if you talk about Paul Moyer that way, don't you have to put Mitch Haniger in that conversation too?
And that tells Someone did text and say
Mitch Haniger.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, that's right. Jason Pierre-Paul is another one.
Yeah, you had mentioned him.
I mentioned him.
Yes.
AP's 2000. Yes, duh. Adrian Peterson. His season after the ACL injury is like part of his legacy.
Yeah. That is a big part of it. Someone brought up T.O., broken leg, and playing in the Super Bowl. I'm with you on that, and that was a tremendous feat for him, but that doesn't immediately come to mind when I think of T.O., right? I think of the dynamic playmaker, or I think of the brash personality, I mean, the epitome of diva, you know, just the... what I think of more, not the broken leg and playing in the Super Bowl, I think more of the interview that he gave in his own driveway as he was doing sit-ups and talking to media and all that kind of stuff. I view more of that about T.O. than anything else.
Here's the thing of someone said Alex Smith, and I can't tell if this speaks to just the injuries or just kind of the bad injury luck that he's had. But my first thought, because I was thinking of legacy altering or career altering, my first thought was getting the concussion with San Francisco, getting benched, and then the start of Colin Kaepernick's career there.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, a very, very monumental injury was obviously the broken leg. Like, my first thought went to the end of his career with San Francisco.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Huh. I think because I was thinking of like...
I mean, for his career
you were
arc
the first
at that
pick,
point.
You were solid. This was a team that had a lot of talent around you. It's the same thing of when people talk about like a Bledsoe kind of situation. The idea of what altered your career? Did it end your career or alter it? Like the broken leg, it didn't end his career because he returned. And now that's a huge part of his legacy. Like that is talked about with him first. I don't know why I thought the concussion first.
No, I mean, it obviously had a significant impact, but then
it was controversial.
It was at the time, no doubt. But you look at Alex Smith now, and you look at the broken leg and the fact that he nearly lost his life to that and then found his way onto the field. I mean, that will forever be remembered, you know, into Alex Smith's career from that standpoint. 253, adding to the legacy and the legend of Kobe Bryant shooting two free throws with a torn Achilles and making both of them. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think that one's a great one.
So many people mentioned.
We've got a few Kirk Gibson mentions, the 88 World Series. He, I think he tore his ACL the end of the regular season, sat out most of the playoffs, then comes pinch hits, hits a home run.
How about this one?
That's a great one,
too. This is an interesting angle. The 425 says, well, if we're talking about mental pain, emotional pain, how about Brett Favre playing after the death of his father? I think it was his best game ever.
Oh, man. I think we should
absolutely count that as part of his legacy. I know we're talking about injuries, but man.
I remember that game just, that was a special game. That was a special moment. I mean, the emotions of that game, watching him play, I mean, it was, wow. I mean, that was incredible. I do remember that for sure.
There are a number of athletes, though, to the point where when you think of them, the second thing you think of is that injury. Maybe not completely. Yeah. Like for Tiger Woods, the second thing I think of isn't the injury or injuries that he's had, but it comes up there pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's true. And you mentioned this.
Whereas with Joe Theismann, it's the first thing I think of.
Yeah, it is the first thing. And that's really what I think of in this conversation. Because the other thing, too, is like Drew Brees, is that the first thing that comes to my mind with the shoulder injury and all that? Is it part of his legacy and is it part of his storied career? No question. I mean, it entangles Nick Saban, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, the Miami, the team doctor there, didn't clear him. He goes to New Orleans, has this Hall of Fame career there and breaks all these records. And Nick Saban is no longer coaching in the NFL because of that. I mean, not because of that, but one of the many reasons why he wasn't. He was a one-and-done coach in the NFL. But Drew Brees is an incredible story based off of that as well. But it's not the first thing that I think of. I think of the passing records and all of that, and you know the way that he finished his career, not necessarily the middle part of his career, even though that's a significant part of his story.
There are some guys that are kind of, the injury signals the transition to something else, though, like Bledsoe. So many great moments, but especially if you're outside of New England, one of the first things you're going to think
have
of.
Have you guys watched that Man in the Arena? I know we got to go do it. It is incredible. I didn't know how I would feel about it, but you know when you talk about, you know, the transition of hating Brady to liking Brady?
I've made that transition. This,
yeah, and I have too, and I really, really loved watching that first one in particular, because it goes through the whole story of Drew Bledsoe and Tom Brady, and really Bledsoe was the featured piece in that.
Yeah.
In that first episode, it was incredibly done. The thing I hate about it, though, is you look at the way the team was built and the conversation around the team, it makes you like the New England Patriots, and I can't get
on
board with
that. Don't let them do that to you.
But it has been really, really cool to watch, and I think it's been really well done.
All right. Now, let's actually get to that conversation coming up in just a few minutes. The Seahawks couldn't do what the Pats did last night. That's partly because few other teams could have, or have, really, since the 70s. But it's also because Bill Belichick has done something better than anyone else. That's next.